Hi, I'm Colin Carr, remuneration consultant based in London. Like you, I'm passionate about remuneration and sustainability. And this is what I call responsible reward. Over the past 30 years, I've had the pleasure of working with global clients in financial services, energy, technology, and retail. I enjoy working with responsible investors and employers who care about how they do business as much as how much money they make, because they understand that one impacts the other. I'm bringing to you the Paying for Good podcast, and with my guests, we share our knowledge, provide advice, and tell inspirational stories on a different aspect of responsible reward every week. My aim is for you to become an employer, an investment opportunity, and an investor of choice to play a part towards achieving global sustainability goals. So enjoy the show and feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn to continue the conversation. Hi everyone. Today I'm delighted to welcome Jess Lobo from the UN Global Compact Network. And Jess has been with us before, actually. If you remember, Jess, you recorded an episode for us back in June 2021 to introduce the UN Sustainable Development Goals to the audience. It was a great podcast, and if you've missed it, then it's number 32 from June 2021, and it was with Jess Lobo, who is with us today, Global Goals Program Manager at the UN Global Compact Network UK. Jess, do you want to tell us a little bit about what your job entails again? Just remind us and tell us what the Global Compact is about, and your role within the network, please.
Yeah, thanks, Corinne, and thanks for inviting me back. Great to be back on the podcast and discussing some of the SDGs and where we've got to. So I work at the UN Global Compact Network UK, and we're part of the world's largest corporate sustainability initiative. So we've got in the UN Global Compact more than 17,000 members worldwide who have committed to our 10 principles to support sustainability, and another 3,500 non-business members. It's a fantastic network, and our role really in the UK network is to support all of those members that are based in the UK, but also the wider business community as well. And we support our members around, I guess, three key pieces. One is operationalizing our 10 principles to support sustainability, and those principles are in the areas of human rights, labor, anti-corruption, and environment. The second thing is really to support our members to report annually on their progress to embed those principles into their business and their operations. And the third piece is around supporting the wider UN development agenda. And of course, that's best represented by the Sustainable Development Goals. So my role, particularly as Global Goals and Climate Program Manager, is to really help businesses understand what the SDGs are and how they can be contributing to this massive world's to-do list, and look at some of the different tools and resources and best practice that can really help us drive action on this huge agenda.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, we will talk about tools and resources a bit later on, because that would be really helpful to the audience. Do you want to remind us, Jess, about the SDGs then? That's the acronym for the Sustainable Development Goals. You know, what they are, how long for, and really there's a number of targets behind the 17 goals. So just give us a little high-level summary again, please.
That's right. So the Sustainable Development Goals were agreed in 2015 by all UN member states. So the UN undertook one of the world's largest consultations ever to work out what it will take for us to essentially create the world that we want. And the result of that consultation were 17 goals, really holistic in the entire framework. So they cover everything from social issues like gender equality, like education, like health. They look at environmental issues, so things like climate action, protecting life below water, looking at our energy, and some economic areas too. So also looking at economic growth and looking at decent work and governance and peace. So the goals themselves They're incredibly interconnected, a really holistic framework. And underneath them sit 169 targets. Those targets really identify what it is that we're trying to achieve with the goals. And underneath those targets sit 232 indicators that tell us what we need to be measuring to know when it is that we've achieved them and when we've not. So I mentioned that all UN member states signed up to deliver the SDGs. And the SDGs are intended to be achieved by 2030. So we're almost halfway through that now. And well, what that's what I think we'll talk about a little bit later about where we are exactly with it. I guess essentially, although it was governments that signed up to achieve the SDGs, it's really going to take everybody to help us get there. So we're going to need business predominantly, but we're also going to need academia, we're going to need civil society, we're going to need individuals all to be working on the same agenda for us to be achieving these goals, which essentially help us take climate action, tackle inequalities, and create the future that we want.
Yes, so we're going to concentrate on the role of businesses today. But indeed, it'd be really useful to understand even at the macro level. So what's happening? Let's start with the country level. What's happening at the UK level from an achievement point of view? And then we'll talk about businesses. Because as you rightly said, Jess, we're halfway through. The rumor is really that we're not making as much progress as we should be, as we'd like to. So you run some reviews every so often to find out how the country is doing. Do you want to tell us about those reports? Because you kindly invited me to the evening the other day where we looked at the summary and the achievements. But for people who were not able to attend, would you like to tell us about the reviews that you carry out every so often?
Absolutely. So the reports that we carry out called it's a series of reports called Measuring Up. And the first report was actually done by an organization called UK Stakeholders for Sustainable Development. And we took on their mission back in 2020, which is why we've been producing the second report recently. And I'll give you a little bit of context of why we felt those reports were necessary to produce. So back in 2018, at the time, the UK government itself hadn't made any commitments to, or at least not when they started on the process, to reviewing and reporting on their progress on the goals. And UKSSD at the time really felt that that was an area that was missing, that we needed to understand where we actually were doing, how far we'd come already in the first 3 years of the goals, and identify what some of those big challenges were. And so UKSSD set on this mission to produce the first Measuring Up report. And as I said, that came out in 2018. And the report you mobilized a community of a number of different organizations to review how the UK was performing against those targets. So I mentioned there was 169 targets that sit underneath the goals. So they're looking at the targets, the policy context, some of the historical trends that affect us achieving them. And at that time, off the targets which were relevant to the domestic delivery of the goals in the UK, the UKSSD only found that the UK was making good progress on 24% of those targets. So not even a quarter of the targets were we making good progress on. And there were some really significant issues with it, with a number of them. Some of it around not having enough policy in place, some of it around us not making enough progress or performance, and some where we just didn't have the data. And so that exercise was done in 2018. In 2019, the government themselves then produced their own voluntary national review, which did, I guess, echo a lot of the similar findings. And I think there was a few criticisms of the government's voluntary national review itself, which, although was very welcomed, it didn't particularly engage in meaningful dialogue with individuals or organisations, and in many respects, I think painted a slightly rosier picture of the plans or for achieving the goals. And that was 2019. And then we all know what kind of happened next in the UK. It's been eventful few years. And essentially, progress on the SDGs has stalled and even reversed in some areas of the country, in part due to the impact of the pandemic, but of course, very much due to a lot of the other things that have been going on and a lot of things that haven't been going on, but really we need to be acting on them. So we have been encouraging the government to do a second voluntary review so that we can really understand where we are at now. And as yet, the government haven't made any commitments of their own to do a second review. So we really felt that it was time for us to measure up again, and understand, with everything that's happened in the last 4 years, how are we doing exactly on those various different targets. Again, identify what are some of the biggest challenges, and making recommendations for government and other stakeholders to really identify what needs to be done so that we can be achieving these goals, in the next few years.
Yeah, so you conducted the version two of your report quite recently.
That's right. So,
And what came
version
out of that?
two. Yeah, so version two, it was a big process. So we worked with more than 100 different organisations and individuals to help us pull together all the research, do a lot of data analysis, a lot of testing of some of our evaluations, gathering and searching into all various different policies and then other sources to be able to pull this report together, and. What we found, so we looked at just the targets that are relevant to the domestic delivery of the goals in the UK, and that's in part to follow on from the first report, but also because Bond, another organisation, did a similar report this year, kind of in parallel to ours, which looked at the UK's role internationally. So we were just focusing on the targets relevant to the domestic agenda, and so we looked at 132 of those 169 targets, and what we found is that the UK is only making good progress on 17% of them. So that's even less than 2018. What we found is that there's an adequate performance on 64% of the goals, so a lot of them sitting in that area. 11% where there's either little to no policy in place for us to achieve the or even address the target, or where performance is poor, or maybe in some areas where it's regressing, and then the remaining 8% of targets, we felt that there was insufficient data or unsuitable data for us really to be able to get a good understanding of what that progress was looking like. So it's pretty bleak. What we have been able to do with the results from this second report is compare it to the first one 4 years ago. And from that, we found that 23 targets have improved, 18 targets have regressed. And I think what's a bigger story than the ones that regressed are actually 65 of the targets, which we previously rated. So it was a red, amber, green rating. We rated them amber or red, which means either inadequate performance or really poor performance. So 65 of those targets, which were previously rated amber or red, have been rated amber or red again. So they've seen absolutely no change in the last 4 years. And I guess that's not particularly surprising, but it is disheartening, and really identifies where some of those critical areas are that we need to be working on.
Yeah, indeed. So 17% instead of the 24 4 years ago, where we're doing well. That's as you rightly say, quite disheartening from a lack of progress point of view. But then, I read somewhere in your literature that you were saying, I think Boris Johnson only mentioned the words UN SDGs once in 4 years or something. So, if the government is not li leading in this area, it's a bit difficult for business to ju just business to step in and cover that gap, isn't it?
It is, and I think that's one of the biggest findings that we've got in the report. We really need top level political leadership for us to be achieving these goals, and like you mentioned there, even just mentioning the SDGs has been really lacking from really anybody in the government in the last few years, and that in a large way has not been able to mobilise the stakeholders that we really can get to help us contribute to this agenda. So we did do a piece in the report looking at really how the government is holistically looking at kind of working on this framework. And I think the biggest challenges that we found is that the government doesn't have an overarching plan to deliver its commitments to delete to achieve the SDGs. There has been some progress that's been made in terms of embedding the goals into departmental objectives, but it's not particularly consistent, and we've not always seen the budgets needed to be able to embed the SDGs or kind of actually get those financial resources channeled into some of the priority areas. And I think one of the biggest challenges that we have found that kind of come out time and time again in the research is that the government is really missing an opportunity to use the SDGs to ensure that its policy making is coherent and to be starting to join the dots between a lot of these challenges, which essentially are systemic, but also incredibly interconnected. And without having that more holistic framework, without being able to use the lens of the SDGs to guide some of that policy making, it's resulted in very disjointed and siloed approach to policies, and really lacking, as I mentioned, really missing that opportunity to mobilize a lot of the stakeholders who are already behind the goals but need some of that political leadership to be able to start taking meaningful and effective action.
Yeah, so you mentioned just that we were doing better in 23 targets and not so well gone down in 18 of them. Can you tell us like the kind of areas where we've improved and the areas where we're not doing so well? Is that possible?
Yeah, of course I can. I think in terms of the areas that we have improved, there were specific goals, I think, around food waste, for example. That has reduced 15% since 2007. So that's incredibly encouraging on a very good downward trend. And actually, in terms of waste, there has been a lot of kind of sector level guidance and roadmaps that are helping us tackle some of our biggest waste problems. So that's been positive. I think we're starting to see, particularly since leaving the EU, that the government has been introducing some environmental protection measures and some sustainable agriculture policy. What we've not got yet is, we've not really seen whether that is effective. We've not been able to see the results of some of that those policy. But it is actually, at least we've got some of that policy starting to come through. And I think one area that we've noticed, the government has obviously got a net zero ambition, net zero strategy, and there are gaps and challenges with that strategy itself. But there are plans in place to upgrade some of our infrastructure as a result of those net zero ambitions, and that is something else that we've seen some positive changes in. So I think that's on the kind of the good side. I think some of the areas that we've seen that have regressed, and I suppose probably some of these aren't going to be surprising to anybody, but I think some of the data that sits behind it has certainly shocked some of us. But I think goals around poverty, things like hunger, for example, energy, what we're seeing is that the impact of COVID-19 and now, of course, the cost of living crisis are really threatening poverty and food security and the affordability of our energy. And so some of those targets are the ones that we've seen that have got worse. And I think what's interesting to note is that a lot of the research that we did on and a lot of the data that we were collecting was earlier in the year. There is a bit of a data lag. We're still waiting for data to catch up on, we've got some data from during COVID, but not necessarily a lot of data after COVID. And some in some areas we've not even got data as recent as 2020. So I think we're going to see actually once that kind of data catches up a little bit, we're going to see things get even worse than they actually look in some of the areas of the report.
Right, so getting the data seems to be
Yeah,
a challenge in itself.
absolutely. It is difficult, and especially something like the SDGs, when there is a lot of different data to be collecting. I think The Office for National Statistics have got an SDG data platform where they collect and display all of the relevant UK data that maps to all of the different targets and indicators. And that's been a fantastic tool for us in this process. There have been a few areas, as I mentioned, that the data is still not yet available or not as relevant as we think it could be for the domestic delivery of the goals, but it's definitely a useful start and really good for us to be able to use that as the foundations for the research that we did for the report.
So clearly, I mean, you know, we're not making the progress that we should make or we'd like to make. Is there anything that comes to mind that would help to accelerate that gap between, you know, wishes and ambitions and what's actually happening?
I think, I mean, I mentioned it earlier that I think the absence of the SDGs in the government's agenda has been a really missed opportunity to address some of these systemic issues holistically. And that actually applies to all different actors. But I'll stay focused on the kind of the government side for now. What we're seeing is that we are leaving people and places behind. And we really need to start using, you know, the lens of the SDGs or just more holistically looking at these issues so that we're addressing them. So I think as an example of that is that transport is the biggest emitting sector in the UK. And as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing lots of kind of plans and some investment that are going into achieving some of those net zero ambitions. So things like decarbonising our public transport and looking at how we can reduce the reliance on private car travel. But what we found in our report is that 51% of rural public transport users in the UK don't have access to a hospital within an hour, or don't have access to their nearest hospital within an hour. And that's compared to just 8% in urban areas. So what we need to ensure is that any investment that goes into decarbonising our transport is not only spread evenly across the UK, but it also looks at plugging those gaps first and prioritising those areas so that we're not kind of further isolating people and not limiting access to health or access to jobs or access to other services. And of course, in turn, if we take that more holistic view of transport and what exactly what it helps to join up all of those different issue areas, we'll also then be helping net zero because we'll reduce the use of private cars for those journeys, you know, people traveling to the hospital or to their jobs or to other services. And I think that's what I think progress needs to look like. And that's how we can really accelerate progress for the SDGs is by having a holistic approach off those issues. And so I think that's one of the things which government really needs to do. But as I said, I think that also boils down to all sorts of stakeholders coming out of, and we're definitely seeing that with some areas like climate, where there is a lot of action, there is a lot of talk at the moment about the things that we can do. But we almost need to zoom out of some of those more siloed areas and understand everything that is connected to it and how we can be working on everything and really raising our levels of ambition across this agenda so that we don't risk undermining our action in others.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Jess. So that was really examples as to, I guess, what government policy can do to plug that gap. Now I'd like to turn our attention to businesses. And in particular, there are three goals that I haven't identified that keep coming up in my conversations with businesses, mainly, you know, HR and remuneration professionals and investors. The first one is around goal number one, which is called no poverty. And you did mention this really sad situation of poverty with people, you know, once people are actually employed. And that is a big topic at the moment. The second one is around SDG 4, which is called quality education, because I think there is a lot there that can be done in order for people to play a bigger role in embedding the SDGs in their day lives. And the third one is around the last goal, which is goal 17, which is called partnerships, because quite clearly, it's not the role of one company, one individual. It's by working together that we can actually make progress on the 16 other goals. So shall we start with the first one? So goal number one, no poverty, but let's focus at, I know, I mean, first of all, there's no poverty for everyone, but it's also a really sad situation, as I said, where we are seeing people who are in full-time employment and still not being able to earn enough to have a decent living standard. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, it's incredibly sad, and this is, some of the numbers that I was particularly shocked at. What we found when we did the research is that there are approximately 13.4 million people in the UK who are in poverty, and that's about one in every five people. And to me, that was just an incredible number. And what we're seeing is that there are actually, huge disparities between the groups. So, people of from minority ethnic backgrounds or people with disabilities are actually more likely to be in poverty than those who are not. I guess, like I said, with all the SDGs, obviously there's huge connections between different areas. So we're looking at the impacts that poverty then has on health and the impacts that your housing has on your poverty. And one of the findings that goal two, which is around food, we actually found that so earlier this year in April, almost 15% of the UK population experienced food insecurity in April this year. And of course, that's incredibly linked to poverty as well. And for looking at this with a business lens on, these are the people. I mean, they're not just your employees, but they're also your customers and your clients. That's the community that you work in, they're your suppliers. And so I think, the cost of living crisis is incredibly real, and there's lots obviously about it in the news at the moment. What I think a really practical thing that business can do is start looking into paying the living wage. And the Living Wage Foundation itself has got lots of great research, and what they found earlier this year is that this year it was estimated that there'd be workers who are on the minimum pay rather than on the living wage. Would need an estimated £800 extra just to cover the rising costs. And that £800 is a difference of 13 weeks of food. And so I think for businesses, it's obviously a bit of a business case to put forward, but I think there are a huge amount of advantages to paying the living wage and essentially ensuring that all of your employees can pay for that extra 13 weeks of food that they're going to need. And I think that's a very practical thing that businesses can do to help support some of those people that might exactly be one of those one in five.
Yeah, and in fact, I've got some numbers in front of me regarding the real living wage, which is what you're talking about, which is that the what the foundation is recommending is £11.95 in London, £10.90 elsewhere in the UK. Important to remember that the government's just increased the national living wage. Well, that will take effect from April next year. From £9.50 to £10.42, that is still below the real living wage of £10.90 or £11.95 that the Living Wage Foundation is recommending. But there has been some progress with a nearly 10% increase for the over 23s. So definitely something that can be looked at both for the internal workforce, but as you rightly said, also for the supply chain. Because somebody somewhere is not getting paid that much money.
Absolutely. And I think it's really great that we're seeing that gap between the national minimum wage and the real living wage is closing. And if anything, it makes it easier for businesses to make the business case to pay, that extra 50p to per hour per employee. It makes it easier to make that business case and to really meet the real living wage. And there's, as I said, there's a fantastic amount of research and business cases on the Living Wage Foundation of just all of the different benefits that a business can enjoy as a knock-on impact of that. But I think it's really a really critical area that all businesses can look into.
That's great. Thank you, Jess. So let's move on to the second SDG that I wanted to focus on, which is SDG 4, quality education. Because what I'm seeing when I'm working with organizations is a bit of a sometimes a lack of understanding as to what ESG is about. So I'm having conversations with people at this time of the year, which is, the last quarter of the year. My peers are busy with pay reviews and how to distribute the money for next year's bonuses and pay increases. And I'm having some weird conversations along the lines of, yeah, I don't have the time to do ESG at the moment because I'm doing pay review. And people don't seem to understand that, or some people don't seem to understand that there is absolutely a link between the two. And in fact, the pay review fits really nicely under the S of ESG. Or the G of governance. So, any thoughts about quality education and what we can do to maybe increase the awareness on ESG?
Well, the chapter four in our report on quality education, I mean, I suppose a lot of it looks at school and children's education, but adult literacy is a part of it. But so too is, the education and skills needed to promote sustainable development. And this is a target that doesn't just sit in goal four. It also sits in goal 12 on responsible consumption and production, and goal 13 on climate action. And in many ways, underpins the entire framework. I think what we found is general awareness and concern of sustainability issues is really growing in public discourse, and it's also increasingly covered by well, not by all, but definitely by some sections of mainstream print and media. But many people really still lack the information that they need and that greater awareness to take really effective action. Either at work or even just at home, implementing sustainable behaviors in their lifestyles. And I think that's one of the areas that I think quite effectively and not at significant resource, but business can really support a lot of their staff who are having that greater awareness and greater concern of sustainability issues, but not really sure at exactly how they can be working on those issues, how it relates to different parts of their jobs, and also understanding that slightly deeper level of knowledge that's needed on some of these very specific issues that affect them. I think ESG training is something that I think everybody can benefit from, and with the fact is that there was always, I mean, I learned a huge amount just going through the process of pulling this report together myself. There's always so much more to learn within ESG and so much more that we can be tackling that I think getting everybody even just up to date, but really getting them to feel empowered that they have the knowledge and that they have the skills and the awareness to then be able to take action on it, that's really important.
Yeah, and just reminding everyone that ESG is not just about climate change. There is so much more, and in fact, the 17 SDGs are a very good summary of what's covered under the ESG factors. So yeah, really important to not mix the two, and certainly not limit ESG to the environment only, and only a small part of the environmental concerns. In fact, I think you were saying yourself that sometimes people confuse ESG with recycling as well. So that's again a small part of it, but not certainly not covering the three pillars. The last goal I'd like to talk about today, because there is so much to talk about the SDGs, is goal 17 around partnerships and what businesses can do to partner. Or when they partner with whether that's, their investors, their clients, their employees, other businesses, their supply chain, the regulators who will have a view as to what they do, to make progress on the SDGs. So, would you like to tell us maybe a little bit about what's happening? If we look at businesses, what's happening? If you're a big business, you're more likely to have made progress on the sustainability agenda versus maybe SMEs that are finding it a bit more difficult. Any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, we've got in the report itself nearly 50 case studies, which are, I mean, really just a small flavor of all of the different action that's going on across the different SDGs. But many of those case studies represent very strong partnerships between businesses and local governments, or between businesses and civil society organizations and the such. And I think partnerships is really critical. You mentioned it right at the start there, Corinne, that we can't do this alone. We can't do this by ourselves. And some of the more some of the bigger organizations will have found, or some of the more advanced ones will find, that there is only so far that you can go by looking internally and looking at your own operations and supply chains. What we actually need is to see businesses starting to make those partnerships to be able to leverage some of their expertise with perhaps others' experience, or vice versa. Leverage their resources with some kind of civil societies and their expertise, and some really inspiring and fantastic partnerships that are coming out of some of that work. I think at the other end of the scale, you mentioned some of the smaller businesses that are just starting on this agenda, but at the same time, being able to establish partnerships and to be able to be part of those some of those networks and forums can really help a small business then scale up some of its contributions and be part of that bigger mobilization towards action for the goals. And that's where I think definitely a lot of action that we're seeing at the local level is becoming really effective by just looking at who's on your doorstep and what kind of things your neighbours are doing, and what kind of things you can do together with them to solve some of those common challenges.
Yes, indeed, and for smaller businesses, I've seen that being sustainability focused is actually a differentiator when attracting talent and business.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
yeah, much something to bear in mind, and not something you do once you've got more time, more resources, more money. It becomes something that you embed in the way you carry out your business. You tell us a little bit about how the Global Compact Network can help. Organizations, businesses of whatever size, what tools and resources are available to translate these SDGs, which, as you explained at the beginning of our talk, were very much signed up to by governments. So how do we translate these big country goals, international global goals, into actions that businesses can take? And I'm sure that the network has got a number of tools and resources to help.
We do. There are two that come to mind, but I would really encourage you to have a look to all of the listeners. If this is something that you're starting to explore for yourselves, or really looking to take the next steps, have a look at some of the tools and resources on the UK Networks website, or even at the global level, because there really are a lot. One that comes to mind is the SDG Compass, which guides companies in kind of four or five steps of understanding what the SDGs are, and then being able to set goals and integrate them into the business. But one of those steps in the compass is actually identifying which areas are priorities for your business, and looking across your value chain and mapping that against the SDGs. And I think that helps with a little bit of that translation piece, or that kind of context setting piece, to really start to understand where is it that you are already contributing to these goals, whether that's having a positive or negative impact, something that you can either then scale up or reduce. But I think it helps to bring some of those goals to life a little bit by looking at exactly your value chain and mapping that against the framework. I think the other resource that we've been working on in the past couple of years is kind of doing that translation piece for businesses. And what we've done is set out 10 benchmarks. They're called the SDG Ambition Benchmarks. And the idea is we've looked at all of the SDGs and the targets and identified 10 areas that we think businesses can drive the greatest impact and essentially make the greatest contribution to this agenda, and translated that into 10 benchmarks. And they're supposed to be ambitious, but I think things that all businesses could achieve by 2030. And they are designed that any business of any sector, any size can work towards. So, for example, things like getting gender balance across all levels of management, or, you know, we mentioned living wage earlier, paying 100% of employees a living wage, or things like setting emissions reduction targets in line with a 1.5 degree pathway, or, you know, looking at things like circular economy and land and anti-corruption. I would really encourage you to have a look at those benchmarks, because they do kind of, in my eyes, they do two things. One is that translation piece, but the other is really setting that level of ambition that we need everybody to be working on in order for us to achieve the goals by 2030.
So we'll certainly refer our audience to your website in the newsletter that will accompany this episode, to get access to these two resources that you've mentioned. In your report, you're making recommendations for businesses as well, at the very end of the report. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, what practical steps? So you've mentioned a few already, which is in terms of paying minimum wages and setting ambitious goals. Anything else that comes to mind in terms of what practical recommendations you would make for businesses to make progress on the sustainability agenda?
So in the report we make five recommendations really, and this is looking across the entire private sector. And those parts, so the first recommendation is for businesses to either continue or if not already, to identify and prioritize the goals and targets that are most relevant to the organization, and go through that process that I discussed the SDG Compass supports with. So integrating that into your core practice and process, really deepening the implementation and across all of the your operations, your products, your services, your people, and your finance. So that's the first recommendation, really, is for businesses to continue to do that big piece of work. I think the second one, very closely with the SDG ambition benchmarks that I suggested, is actually exploring those and using that to set goals that align with those needs and ambitions of the SDGs. And I think that's a really important piece, is not only identifying what you can do, but then being really ambitious about it and being as ambitious as the SDGs call for. And then, you know, measuring and reporting on that progress. I think the third recommendation that we make is for businesses to use the SDGs to be able to enhance stakeholder engagement in sustainability, and embed the SDGs into, you know, your communications and your reporting, because they are a really accessible framework. They're very easy for people to understand and for people to engage with, and I think that's something that all businesses could make use of in trying to engage your stakeholders in some of those more complex issues. The fourth one, I suppose, looks at the fourth recommendation looks a little bit more at kind of business networks and trade associations, I suppose, you know, places like us, but in supporting more SME engagement with the SDGs and providing more SME tailored guidance. And that's something that the UN Global Compact is working on already, but there's going to be a lot more coming out in 2023. And our fifth recommendation for the private sector points exactly to that partnership piece that we were just discussing. So business should really look for opportunities to engage in industry-wide partnerships and multi-stakeholder collaborations that can really help accelerate innovation and scale up some of that action and that solutions. And so those are the recommendations that we've got for business.
So these are great calls to action to the listener to actually implement those recommendations and certainly look into them to see how they can help with the achievement of the sustainability agenda. As we said, Jess, there is so much to talk about. So if people wish to continue the conversation with you and read A bit more about what the compact is about. Would you like to remind us what your details are? And of course, encourage everyone to read version two of the measuring up report, which the link to which we will include in the newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely. So I exactly that. I would really encourage everybody to look at the report and to use it, because we want it to be a useful tool to help people understand some of where those opportunities and those challenges are, and to contextualize the work that you might already be doing, and to share some of those findings to start conversations and to catalyze those actions and those partnerships. And as I said, there's a lot of case studies that you can take some inspiration from, and some tools and resources that are even within that report itself. So really would encourage you to dive into the bits that are relevant to you and to explore it. And so that report is available at www.measuringup.org.uk. And from there, you can then link through to our website, which is unglobalcompact.org.uk. And there's loads of tools and resources on that Global Goals page of our website. My email address is also there, but alternatively, you can find me on LinkedIn, and that's just Jessica Lobo.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Jessica. So this was my interview with Jessica Lobo, Global Goals Program Manager at the UN Global Compact Network UK. Second episode with Jess, and I very much encourage you to listen to the first one again. That was episode number 32 from June 2021. But Jess, some thank you very much again for all the research that you and your colleagues are doing on, how we progress, even if it's little progress that we're making on these global goals, because these are so important for our future and the future of the next generations. I'd like to thank the audience as well for listening to us today, and look forward to hearing how we're making progress and how we can continue to work with each other. So thank you very much, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me back.
Thank you so much for listening to the Paying for Good podcast. If you enjoyed the show, then feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn to continue the conversation.